Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. And let's point out one of KPP Financial's investment programs. This one is Balanced Income. It's steady yield. And for those who want to go easy on the risk, this investment approach primarily focuses on attaining an income stream through stable, dividend-paying companies and quality corporate bonds. You can see more about it on investtalk.com. Just click on the investment tab. End of commercial. And now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of InvestTalk. It is April 20th, 2016. Above average investing for the average investor. That's our motto. As I always say, you are invited. I hope you will add your voice to the program. We have this hour together, so I want you to feel comfortable and welcome to join the discussion. Be part of the discussion. Drive the discussion. We'd love for that to happen. Robert Hagstrom wrote a book about Warren Buffett. It's called The Warren Buffett Way. And segments of it are quoted in Investopedia. The book offers readers valuable insight into how Buffett actually thinks about investments. In other words, the book goes into the psychological mindset that he uses and has made him very, very, very wealthy. Now, many investors think of stocks as just pieces of paper. That's all they think about. That's not how he does. That's not how you should think of it. I understand that helps you become non-emotionally attached, and you shouldn't be emotionally attached to your companies. Excuse me. But be more pragmatic about it. But the Buffett looks at stockholders as owners of the company, which you are. You are part owners of the company when you own the stocks. And that's how you should look at it. I own this company. It's my company. Do I want to hold it for a longer term or do I want to sell my company now? But is that the way you think about the stocks? That it's your company? He does. And his idea is to buy it and hold it forever, even though he does sell, he does. But that's not when he goes into a stock. His thought process is different. He wants to own the company because it's ran well. It's got a great business model. Those kinds of things. It makes good money, has great return on equity. All those things I talk about on the show all the time is what he looks for when he buys stocks. And so should you buy companies. You're buying companies. So how confident are your buy and sell decisions? Are your decisions well grounded in facts? Do you feel you know everything you need to know about a company before you buy it or sell it? Do you know everything you know about its competition? Okay, let's talk about it. I want to hear about your portfolio positions. What is it? What's your strategy? How have you done? Have you done well this year? Poorly this year? Because the market is about even a little bit. If you talk about the NASDAQ, it's down. If you talk about the Dow, it's up a little bit, and the S&P. So parts of the market aren't doing well. Parts of the market are doing very well. So where are you? Give us a call. Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART or is our anytime number, and you can ask a question right now.
Hi there, Steve and Justin. This is Chris from Washington, D.C., podcast listener. I wanted to know about hedging my portfolio. During this time, I have no idea if the market's going to continue upward or if there's going to be a change in direction or a bear market or anything like that. If I wanted to hedge my portfolio and invest in an inverse fund, like an inverse ETF, what percentage of my portfolio should I devote to something like that? Would it be like 10% of my portfolio? Is that an appropriate hedge, or 20%? Is there a general rule of thumb? All right, thanks a lot. I enjoy listening to your show.
Great. There's no general rule of thumb, by the way. There's none. But the thought process is very valid, okay, for protecting your assets. And especially as you get older and you want to take less risk, you know, you can use hedging as a way to do that. Now, using the short ETFs, and he mentioned short ETFs, and we own a number of them in our stock managed account. We own five. And we purchased about 5% each. So you can say that we are 25% hedged. Now, what is normal hedging? There is no normal hedging. There's no normal about it. And we've had this hedge on all year. Don't think I haven't had it on. And I'm in the stock market. We're up tremendously compared to the market. And I still held on to these hedges because I know the market doesn't go down, doesn't go in one direction. It has recently. But remember, it was down 10% in January. That's how fast it fell. And now it's made it all up for the Dow, the S&P, not the NASDAQ, but it has. So it's a personal thing. How volatile, what you really want to do is look at the volatility of your holdings, your whole portfolio. And you might want to look at that by using beta, B-E-T-A, the beta of your portfolio. Look at the beta of all your stocks. If the beta is 1, it has the same volatility as the S&P 500. If the beta is 1.3, that means it's 30% more volatile than the S&P 500. That means volatile on the upside and the downside. And if you're hedging, you want to reduce your beta. Okay? You can reduce your beta. Well, how do I reduce the beta? First, there's one way is to now take all the stocks that have high betas and you can get rid of them and replace them with low betas. That's one way. The other way is to hedge off a certain percentage of that beta. Let's say your average beta is 10%. Okay, 1.1, that's 10% more volatile than the S&P 500. And you don't want to go down as much as the S&P 500. Then you have to hedge more than 10%, right? Because if you hedge 10%, that will reduce the beta of your portfolio by 10%, driving the beta down from 1.10 to 1. So meaning, and 1 is the volatility of S&P 500. Let's say your beta is 1, the same as the S&P 500. You can put on a 20% hedge and you just reduce your beta of your portfolio to 80.8, 20% less volatile than the S&P 500. Meaning if it goes down, it should go down 20% less, the whole portfolio, because your hedges will go up, the portfolio goes down. See, so you have to decide how much you want to hedge against your portfolio. And that first you need to decide how volatile will your portfolio, how volatile does it act? How volatile has it been acting? You know, of course, looking forward, it could be more volatile than it was in the past. So it's never perfect. It's not going to be perfect. It's just a way to try to be more pragmatic, using more common sense. Teaching your kids about money. That's our main talking point today. And I tell you, I have many, 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 many nieces and nephews, and I can't tell you if one parent teaches anything to their kid about money. I do when I'm around them, but they don't. And even the ones that live with me right now don't. So that's going to be our main talking point, teaching your kids about money. And I also want to talk about why the market is marching up. What are some of the reasons why the market is marching up? And none of these reasons have anything to do with sales or profits, because they aren't too good if you've been watching the first quarter numbers come rolling in. Yeah, a lot of them are beating them, earnings expectations, but that's only because the experts are manipulating our expectations. They've ratcheted them way down before the news came out. Now they can say, oh, beat the news, beat the earnings. Look at the banks, though. I can tell you right now, you're not going to have a very strong market rally without the banks participating. You're just not. It has never seen one be very strong ever if the banks do not participate. So that's going to be one of our talking points, reasons why the market is rising. Another one is about jobs. The jobs, people assume that we have a lot of really low-paying jobs and it's not really quite true. And I want to kind of debunk a myth here that the jobs are all bad. No, the ones that produce it, nope. Now, last couple of months, you could say there weren't very good jobs. A lot of jobs produced, but not necessarily high-paying jobs. But I want to talk about in relation to other economic recoveries, how this one is doing. Okay, and things that are disappearing. things that are disappearing. You know that book I recommend called Creative Destruction, where new industries come along and old industries get destroyed, and that's the way our system is built, and that makes for a vibrant system. You let things get destroyed. Well, how about things that are just disappearing out of our, you know, lexicon? How about, like, for instance, clutches? How many drivers, young drivers out there, even know what a clutch is on a car? That's disappearing. So I have a number of other things that are disappearing. Why am I bringing this up? If you think about it, if these things are disappearing, what is reappearing or appearing, taking their place, or what's changing that means that there's a new way to invest or something new to invest in? I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. It's good that you're here. I appreciate it. We'll try to make this hour worth your time. What's the weak link in your chain of investing knowledge? One way you can get access to some easy to digest doses of information and perspective is to subscribe to our premium newsletter. It comes out every Friday. You can try it for a month with no risk. Complete the transaction. You can complete the transaction by going to investtalk.com and just ordering it. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Bruce in Fresno. How you doing, Bruce?
Good, Steve.
Thanks for calling.
I'm wondering about Trinity. TRN. T as in Tom. RN as in Nancy.
Okay.
And looking at the deep value that you're looking for, and wondering if this would be an example of your deep value stock.
It actually would be. Yes. Okay, let's talk about Trinity Industries, everybody. Manufactures rail cars, inland barges, aggregates, highway products, structural, wind towers, steel components. It's a $3 billion company, so it's a mid-cap company. It pays a 2.3% dividend. Why do I say it's a deep value? Well, book value. It's selling for 20% less than book value, for one thing. Meaning, if you liquidated the company, you would get 20% higher money per share than it's trading at right now. It's trading below book value. Now, sales have been falling the last 2 years and the last two quarters. Before that, they were rising. And sales are falling the last 2 years. Okay, so now it's only going to make $1.68 next year. And it's a $19 stock. So that means it's going to be about a 12 or 13 PE. Right now, if you look backward, it's a 5 PE. It looks even cheaper if you look backward. In other words, 2016, it's going to make 226. Last year, made 363 per share. So it looks really cheap looking backward. Looking forward, it just looks pretty cheap, not really cheap. But I like the deep value part is that it has hardly any debt. It's trading at less than book value. Much less, and that's pretty rare in the arts market these days, has 17% return on equity. So I like that fact that it's really good value. Why has it fallen for the last year from 34, 35, all the way down to 16 and now recovered up to 19? Why? Well, think about where they are. They're in the rail car business, railroads, and oil prices have fallen sharply over the last couple of years. So this stock was hurt, but oil prices are stabilizing, aren't they? Bruce, this would be a perfect example of a stock that I would recommend as a deep value stock.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. TRN, Trinity Industries, everybody. This is Invest Talk, by the way, a place to talk about your money, anything financial related. There are many, many ways to spend it, just as many ways to invest it. So let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on InvestTalk.
So why is it parents don't teach their kids about money? Why don't they talk about money? I mean, yeah, they might pay it, give them allowance or something, but I have so many contemporaries and younger people that I know that they never talk about money. Parents just pay for things for the kids as they get older and older and older, never involve them in anything. when they get in their teen years, don't you think that's part of the job as a parent is to teach your kids about money? And I'm not talking about, you know, financial research or anything like that. I'm just talking about the basics, like what are taxes? If a teenage kid gets a part-time job, you need to talk to them about what are the taxes. Get the pay stub and talk about each one of the line items and tell them why he's not getting all the money he thought he was going to get, he or she. How about suggesting that they have 3 months in savings because there's things that happen, you know, for a rainy day, 3 months of your earnings and savings, and maybe even more depending. Why not talk about that? Are the power of compound interest? How does money grow? Okay, that gets a little more complex, but it's not that complex. Maybe have a, you know, talk to your kid about having long-term and short-term plans and goals for your money. And here's one the kids probably do anyways, shopping. How to find the best deals. You can do it online. Use your cell phone. That kind of thing. You know, how about just talking to your kid about the cost of their cell phone? How about once they start getting a job, they pay for that cost of the cell phone? So they just don't take it for granted. They just text away and everything's free. It's not free. Someone has to pay for it. And then, how about costs for colleges? I can't tell you how many nieces and nephews I have. Oh, I want to go away to college. And they want to go out of state. And it costs a fortune to go out of state. Why? Now, unless you're going to Harvard, why? And maybe discuss paying off credit card balances and why that should be done. These are simple things as your kids are teenagers. I'm not sure why no parents I know talk to their kids about this. None. I find that interesting. And my parents didn't either, by the way. Since I have no kids, I've never had kids, unfortunately, I can't tell you if I did or not because I didn't have any. But I would definitely do it. I think it's smart. I think they need to understand when they go out on their own what things cost and not just throw them out in the cold air out there. You know, okay, you're on your own. And then I've seen it over and over and over. Kids get a credit card. Young adults get a credit card. They max it out. And then they find out, oh, I got to pay all this off. And how do I do? You know, then they start to learn. They have to learn the lesson all over again that you learned again and again and again because they didn't really understand how impactful it was to not use credit cards and pay it off every month. How much money do they have to pay? What's the interest rate? How much is going to end up that blouse or shirt you paid $100 for? And if you pay the minimum, how much would it cost to own that shirt? That shirt would be long gone by the time you finish paying it off. That's how much it costs. Your questions come first. Whether you have a stock strategy or just want to know whether you should convert from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, I'm calling you with a question regarding the stock Pfizer. Symbol is PFE. I have some shares and just wanted to see what you think the outlook is for the stock in the coming year, whether continue to hold or sell. Thanks for your opinion. Bye.
Now, Pfizer is not a deep valued company. It's a very good company. But it's not deep value. It's not cheap enough for me to buy. Okay, Pfizer develops branded prescription drugs for cardiovascular metabolic diseases. Big company, $205 billion. So that's a mega cap company, mega cap. They're going to make $2.29 this year. That's 9 cents more than last year. Then they're going to make $2.52 next year. That's a 10% increase year over year. Sales have been falling for 7 quarters in a row up until the most recent quarter, and they finally increased 7%. So it looks like this mark, their sales are stabilizing and their earnings are stabilizing. Pays a 3.6% dividend. It's probably a good price to buy it right in here. It's just not a deep value stock. Good cash flow, not much debt. There's nothing you really can say too negative about Pfizer at this point. Now, whenever I look at drug companies, what I look at is I look at the strength or the depth of their pipeline of drugs being tested. How many drugs do they have being tested in phase 1, 2, and 3? And, you know, what kind of drugs? That's the kind of thing you really want to know, because that's where the money is driven from the new drugs coming out. You're listening to InvestTalk. The heart of our program is your question. We want to respond to what you need to know. 888-99-CHART. Please feel welcome to call.
What are value stocks? What makes them different than growth stocks? Or what's your question? Why not ask it right now? 888-99-CHART on InvestTalk. We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Remember, InvestTalk is a ready source of answers, and you can ask your question anytime, 24 hours a day. Leave your question on our listener line if you want it included on the podcast, or send a note directly. Click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com. Let's continue with this Wednesday, April 20th Invest Talk. Check in now with your questions. 888-99-CHART. The line is always open. Invest Talk is produced live 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time, so you can join in the conversation. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. This is Bob from San Diego. I listen to your show on the podcast. My question is, if you have an index fund, like an S&P 500 index fund, and the S&P 500 has gone up significantly, let's say, you know, 20%, would you sell any portion of that? Thank you very much. I listen to your show, and I like it a lot. Thanks. Bye for now.
Well, first I would decide what kind of investor I am. Am I a trader, or am I a long-term investor? If you're a long-term investor, you just buy it, ignore it, okay? If you're a trader, and it's 20% above where you bought it, I would look at it in more in the sense of, well, how long did it take to move that 20%? If it moved 20% in a very short period of time, meaning just a few months, 20%, then yeah, I'd probably take some profits. If I was a trader, I'd definitely take some profits. If it took 3 years to move 20%, then I probably would just ignore it. Okay? Because it's not that much per year. It's not. In other words, what I'm talking about is being overbought or oversold, because things get overbought and oversold in a shorter period of time. Long term, they usually don't get overbought and oversold. And I would look at the fundamentals of the whole S&P 500. Is the S&P 500, remember, the average P/E ratio of the S&P 500 is about 15. Okay, so if that's true, and your index went up 20%. And now the S&P 500, is, let's say, 10% or higher over the P/E ratio of 15, I'd be more prone to sell it, because long-term, it will revert back to its long-term average of 15. So if the S&P 500, let's say, is at 18, and by the way, do you know that that's about what it is right now, 18? That tells you that the S&P 500 is overvalued. And did you know that the S&P 500 is becoming more overvalued, not less, more? Even if the S&P moves sideways and did not go up anymore, it still would become higher. The P/E would still rise because the E is going down. 3 quarters in a row, E has fallen. Earnings have fallen. So that means that the value of the S&P 500 is more than average, more than its own history. So I would tend to sell to take the profits. That's what I would do. Now, if you're a long-term investor, you can ignore it, put it in a drawer, wait 10, 20 years, and you'll be well off. You don't have to worry about it. Okay? Let's talk about why the market's going up, since we were talking about the S&P. By the way, did you know on today, just today, there were 33 stocks that were up on volume, increasing volume, and there was 143 stocks down on increasing volume. Now, why is that important? Market was up today, but why are so many stocks down on higher volume than stocks up on higher volume? This should be just the opposite, shouldn't it? Anyways, reasons why the market is marching up. Number one reason, by the way, these are not in order of why, by the way, but one reason, oil prices have moved off their lows. Now they're, what, $40, $41 a barrel? Remember, it got down to about $26, $27 a barrel and moved up since then. And so has the market. Global economy is not tanking. Everybody was more worried about the global economy. U.S. economy is going to be 2 to 2.5 GDP growth, which is not great. But, yeah, not terrible either. The EU is treading water, which means they're not doing anything. And China looks like it's stabilizing. Their fall, their shrinkage of growth. Looks like it, you know, first quarter they said it was 6.7% GDP growth. Well, maybe that's stabilizing, so the market likes that. The dollar has fallen 6% from its high made last year. So that helps our market because it helps our companies export. Foreign banks, the ECB, Japan, others, are pouring money into their economies. QE, they're having QE. We are not. Our Fed is not, but they are. And finally, the Fed, after raising the rates once in December, has made it very clear that they're not in a big hurry to raise it again, even though they'll probably raise it again in June. They've made it clear they're not in a big hurry to raise rates. The market likes every one of those items. It likes it. Okay, so that's why the market probably is going up, these things. Now, are these things long-lasting? The worry I have is none of this tells us, like Europe and China, the dollar falling, foreign banks pouring money into this. None of this tells us that corporations' earnings are going to improve. And that earnings and sales growth is what drives stock markets eventually. And we need to see that happen. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but we're not seeing it yet. Maybe investors feel that we haven't seen it yet, but it's been almost a year where they've been falling, so maybe they're done falling. Maybe that's what people's thinking is. A reminder to sign up for our Invest Talk Insiders program. You'll have instant access to a library of webinars, which will include our most recent one, Survival Opportunities in a Volatile Market. Just did that a week ago. It will be available to insiders later this week. I mean, we're already in Tuesday, so it'll be pretty soon. Our Invest Talk Insider program is free. Just sign up at investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab.
Now, Invest Talk Real Estate. Chevy Akison, real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about treating your home as a retirement asset.
For most people, their home is a very significant part of their assets and maybe even their retirement assets.
We've talked a lot about this in the past, Justin, and you know what a lot of people forget about is the opportunity cost, right? So a lot of people that have owned properties for a long time have way more house than they really need. And so what I'm finding is a lot of times they have all that equity tied up in their property when they really need maybe a quarter or half of the house that they have, and they're forgetting about the opportunity cost of that money that's kind of locked in their property, right? So as you know, a house can be an asset, but it also can be a liability. So if, say, you have $1 million house when you only need a $500,000 house, if you can take $500,000 out by selling it and downsizing it, a lot of times you're going to make a lot better return with that $500 than just having it locked in your property.
Yeah, right? And you're paying property tax on that larger property, more upkeep on a regular basis, right, with utilities, et cetera. So it is smart, and we've helped clients with that as well.
We just recently helped somebody in Central California.
Exactly.
To downsize, and that's going to be a huge benefit. I mean, if you're looking at coastal properties in a lot of areas of California, the cap rate as a pure investment is 3 or 4%.
Yeah, not very good at all.
It's not good. You can get them a lot better return than that. So
it just makes sense that you downsize, take that equity out of your home, own a place that is more tailored to your needs in retirement, mm-hmm. right? And take that equity out and earn a good, decent return on that, you know, hopefully in a conservative manner, but you can earn a decent return, and that suddenly becomes a home that is, or a piece of asset that somebody has that now has dual purpose, right? It can produce income and produce a place for you to live. So it's a lot more bang for the buck in that manner.
Exactly. You want to turn your home into an asset. What's interesting is we've had a lot of clients buying coastal properties that ideally don't have HOAs, and our clients that are traveling a lot, they'll actually make it a vacation rental when they're not staying there. And they're getting their trips paid for, or even better. So it can be an asset, can be a liability. Most of the time, it's better for someone to downsize, buy a smaller property, and keep them separate. But some people have kind of a hybrid investment / home to live in as well, and we can discuss that option with clients as well.
If you have a question, 888-99-CHART is the number to call, or contact KPP's own licensed realtor and financial advisor, Justin Klein. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART, our first priority is always answering the questions. So let's pick up a call that came in before today's program on our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. I love the show. This is Matt from Minneapolis, Minnesota here. Hey, I have a quick question. I took your advice and got rid of NFLX before they had their big pull-off here yesterday when they missed their expectations for the future, I guess, and there's a sell-off. So with my money I got from Netflix, I'm looking at doing a few things and wondering what you thought might be the best. I'm looking at a Vanguard 500 index fund, which I know has been doing good the past couple months, moving upward at a slow pace here. And also, taking your advice, some value stocks. I've looked at a Vanguard Value Index, VHDYX, I believe it is. And also, I've been looking at its partner, VYM. Anyways, the Vanguard Index Fund, which follows the same traces the index there, the high dividend growth one of the value funds. What would you recommend, a 500 fund, or would you go for a value high dividend fund, or the ETF fund, which is a little cheaper, I guess, in costs and so forth? Thanks. Appreciate it. Love the show. Learn a lot from you guys. Take care.
Well, of those three, I'd probably pick the ETF, VYM, Vanguard High Dividend Yield Exchange Traded Fund, Seeking Performance Corresponding to the FTSE High Dividend Yield Index. It pays 3.1% dividend. I kind of like that. Of those three choices you gave me, I like that one the best. Now, if I might make a suggestion here, I would not be in a big rush to get back in the market. At this stage, you know, here we are mid-late April, and May is around the corner, and there's that old saying, go away in May, and it's there for a reason. When the next correction comes, which I'm fairly confident we'll get it sometime from here to the end of summer, the beginning of the fall, I think we'll get a decent correction in there somewhere, and I would use that to go ahead and reinvest my dollars that you got from Netflix. NFLX is Netflix, everybody. And they came out with their earnings, and it kind of took a dump yesterday. It made a little bit back today. It got about 2.5% back today. But yesterday it was down very, 5 to 8%. I don't remember. I'm just looking at it on a chart. So, and I just would not be in a hurry. That's all I'm suggesting. You can dollar cost average, depending on how much money you have over a period of time. But, you don't want to get eaten up by trading costs either. So you got to consider that. But I do like VYM of those three charts. I like VYM, period. Vanguard High Dividend Yield Index. I've always liked it. I think it's on my, I have an ETF list of high dividend payers, and I think that's on it. And if anybody wants that list, you can just send me an email and I'll send you the list. It's like 5 or 6 high dividend paying ETFs. I appreciate the call. And thanks for listening to the show. I do really appreciate that. Job quality. Everybody, we have seen jobs, 200,000 plus jobs per month in Everybody's pretty happy about the number of jobs, but you hear a lot of whiners about the quality of jobs. And I've complained about some of the quality jobs also, but I like to, you know, I like not to just make up stuff. I like to get to the facts. And the facts are a little different than I thought they were, and I bet you everybody else thought so too. So economists speculate why the consumer spending is lukewarm because of a recent shift in hiring toward lower-paying work. But government employment statistics don't really bear that out. First, here's some bad news. First, the bad news, okay? February and March, hiring trends for February and March wasn't very good. It was leaning or slanted toward lower-paying positions such as retail clerks, waiters, and hotel cleaners. About half of all the new jobs created in February and March paid less than the average U.S. wage of $25.43 an hour. So they weren't that good for that money. But the composition of new jobs generated over the last 12 months has been tilted strongly toward better paying work than the average. Okay, so don't think that that tells you that, you know, so then you look at, well, is this 2 months that have been below average, is that normal? 58% of the jobs created from April 2015 to March 2000 paid above the average hourly wage, mainly white-collar jobs. The gains in higher-paid jobs has taken place despite the loss of nearly 150,000 jobs in energy, the energy industry, and that's a very high-paying industry. So think about that and buck that trend. Now, how about historically? Is it good, bad? Okay, remember, 58% of the jobs created in 2015 and 2016 paid above average, 58%. And hiring trends stack up nearly exactly the same. Nearly 60% of all new jobs created typically pay above average wage when the economy is performing well. And we're at 58%. So we're not that far off. And the quality of the jobs declined early in the recovery, then returned to normal in 2012, and then took a dip in 2014. That is normal in an economic cycle. Of course, there's problems, right? We know there's problems. A lot of jobs are not over 30 hours a week. There's a lot of jobs less than 30 hours a week. And you might look at the Health Care Act for that, because any large employer having more than 30-hour work weeks has to provide health care, 30 hours a week plus. Maybe that's part of the reason. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. I'm here to answer your questions. Our Invest Talk anytime number is 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to William in San Jose. He wants to talk about a stock that I visited this weekend. Got a battery. How you doing, William?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Yeah, so I had a question about O'Reilly, O-R-L-Y, mm-hmm. and I actually wanted to use this symbol as a technical chart question, because O'Reilly just recently experienced a double top. And
yes.
My question was if... two scenarios: if O'Reilly were to break through the double top, what does that mean, and what if it doesn't? So those are two scenarios that I'm looking for. And I did buy O'Reilly, so I'm just thinking, see what the two possibilities are.
Okay. O'Reilly Automotive, everybody, operates 4,671 automotive parts in 44 states. There's one right down the street from me. And my battery died in one of my cars, and I had to go get a battery. Double top means that this stock went to a top, and that figure was like 278 or so in November, okay, of last year. Then it fell, and then it retested that top recently here at the very beginning of April, and it started to come down, and it's now trying to go back up to 273 now. So it's like 5 points or so away from breaking through that double top. If it breaks through, what it means when a stock breaks through resistance, that's what a double top, a triple top is, resistance. When it breaks through, then we say, well, it has, we have no, There's no resistance in front of it, so it's going to run for a while. We just, no one knows what that means, but it's going to run. If it fails, and I'll tell you this, William, I'm thinking that it's going to fail, just putting my two cents out there. If it fails, that means you failed a double or a triple top. This was a double top. It's going to go back down and retest support, and that's right around $230 a share from $273. So these are called support and resistance levels we're talking about, William. So right now the resistance level is near that 278, 280 area, okay, somewhere in that range. Excuse me. And, you know, if it doesn't break through that level in the next few days, then you got to watch out because it probably might go the other way. And you want to be, if you're a trader, you see that happening, you get out. If it breaks like the 20-day moving average, you get out because it's going to go all the way back down to about 230 because that's where the next support comes in. Okay? Does that make sense?
All right.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Chart reading, everybody. Now, I want to remind you that it is not a science. It is an art, and it tends to be true. Why does it tend to be true? Because investors like me, professionals, and a lot of amateurs react to what they see on the chart. And everybody sees this double top, and they know that, oh, that's kind of scary. Okay, and there's resistance there. So I better take some profits. Well, their act of selling causes the stock not to penetrate the double top. Now, the more times a top is tested, the better shot it has to go through it. But a double top and a triple top, well, you gotta wait till it goes through it. Simple as that. Things that are disappearing. This was out of Kiplinger magazine, by the way, online. The plow. Do you know they don't really plow fields anymore? That's not the more modern method to plant. Today, it's no-till or minimum tilling, and you have planting machines that plant the seeds in untilled soil. College textbooks. Now, think about that. College textbooks. So what's going to replace college textbooks? Obviously, tablets. So think about investment opportunities. How about the clutch pedal? High-performance automatic, you know, they have those paddle shifters on the steering column. Manual shifters are going away. How about the blue mailbox? The post office? 55% decline in first-class mail. The blue boxes are not needed anymore. Incandescent light bulbs, they're gone. And last one, your privacy is gone as well. No more privacy, everybody. Time to go. 888-99-TORT is our number. Thank you for being with me today. I appreciate it. I hope this was a productive hour for you. If you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, you can do so by going to investtalk.com. Click on Contact Steve. That's an email directly to me, and I will get back to you. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, and for just a client and everyone at KPP. Thank you for listening today, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.